You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Let me share a couple of words of context for today's reading that you're about to hear. The Assyrians came into the land of Israel and sacked Jerusalem in 596 BCE. And they carted off all the leaders of the Jewish community, religious leaders and civic leaders. Now, those folks who were sent into exile must have hoped that they would be able to return home soon. But generations passed and they remained in Babylon. And the leaders became concerned that those who were being born and raised in that exiled community would not know what it meant to be Jewish. And so they decided what needed to be written down. Stories that had been shared mouth to mouth from family to family now needed to be written down so that it could be used for however long they were in exile to inform people of their own tradition, but also to shape them as Jewish people in community. The story we're about to hear is one of those stories that lays at the heart of the Jewish imagination. Somebody had to decide of all the possible stories that we've shared with each other over generations. This is one that is essential for understanding what it means to be a people shaped by a relationship with God and then a relationship with each other in community. So listen, if you will, to this story of Joseph and his brothers with your ear tuned to what makes this such an important story to be told this way.
Our words of wisdom are from Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 through 21. Realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brothers said,
"What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him?"
So they approached Joseph, saying,
"Your father gave this instruction before he died. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong that they did in harming you. Now, therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father."
Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him, and said,
"We are here as your slaves."
But Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones." In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Happy New Year. It is good to be with you on this second day of the new year, a time that is filled with resolution making, commitments that we want to make for this new year that we hope will add to our health and well-being in body and spirit. Year in and year out, as it turns out, one of the most popular resolutions that is made is to physical exercise, either to begin it or to commit to it more regularly. Now, this resolution is so popular because we kind of look at ourselves as we've come through the holidays. And we know, if we want to be healthier in our bodies, we need to get down to business. We know that our blood pressure will lower, our cholesterol will lower, that our pre-diabetic state can be reversed. We know that whether we walk or swim or bike, that doing it even in regular small increments can have a major impact on our lives. This year, I would like to encourage you to consider an additional resolution. And it is a resolution to commit to regular spiritual exercise. It requires that you do it regularly, that as you do it on a regular basis, you will grow stronger and healthier, and it will contribute to your overall well-being and the well-being of the world around you. And that resolution is to forgive and to ask for forgiveness from others. Palliative care physician Ira Byock knows the power of forgiveness to enhance the well-being of people who are not only living, but those who are preparing for their end of their life. He found that there are four things that people need to say as they approach death in order to spiritually position themselves for the transition that is ahead. Those four things are: I forgive you. Please forgive me. I love you. And thank you. Clearly, half of the things that he has found over the length of his work in medicine, half requires somehow an engagement with forgiveness. You've heard the saying, holding on to resentments is something like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Now, we know that. But sometimes we try to convince ourselves that we're an exception to that rule, that we're able to chew on and to swallow resentments regularly without it having a corrosive and deadening effect on us and the world around us. But Byock reminds us, and when we're honest, we know that in order for us to live, no matter where we are in the life cycle, forgiveness is a central spiritual exercise that we carry out in word and deed. Forgiveness is central to the whole Joseph story that we heard just toward the ends of this morning. Joseph's brothers do not believe that they can trust his generosity and his kindness because of the harm they did to him in his earlier life. They had thrown him in a well because they were angry at their father favoring him. They sold him to Midianites, who took him off to Egypt and then sold him to the Pharaoh. He had two stints in prison in Egypt because of what his brothers had started. He'd have every good reason not to forgive his brothers and to continue to hold a grudge. After all, despite all that had happened to him, he came to hold a high position and to be respected by the Pharaoh himself. And yet, he knows the power and importance of forgiveness. And so he forgives his brothers. They wonder if they can trust that because their father has died. And perhaps now he'll throw them over. But he looks at them and says that he forgives them. It's a powerful moment. A moment that clearly the writers of this story wanted us to hear because they know that part of what it is to be a faith-filled people, to acknowledge a relationship with the divine and with each other that's informed by the divine, that forgiveness lies at his heart. Now, Joseph, in the story, does not just tell his brothers that he forgives them. He welcomes them. He includes them in the prosperity that he has gained in his life in Egypt. So his words and his actions reflect the forgiveness that he offers freely. Now, for those of us who are followers in the way of Jesus, Jesus would have been shaped by that story of Joseph. He would have been nurtured on that story. You can imagine it being shared around the table. And clearly, it's one of the stories that must have had a great deal of power in his life. Because when we look at his life, at least as told by the writers of the New Testament, forgiveness is at the center of Jesus' life as well. He welcomes strangers. He brings in outcasts. He includes women. He feeds the hungry, sees that the naked are clothed, and those who go after him, he forgives again and again. The fact that forgiveness is at the center of Jesus' life ought to have an impact on us, for those of us who follow in his way. We could say that Joseph and Jesus are our forebears in the faith. They've come before us and showed us the way to go that has to do with life, an abundant life. I wanted to share a little clip with you this morning. However, when I reviewed it, it's a clip of a series that's on Apple Plus TV called Ted Lasso. If you haven't seen it, I would encourage you, it's worth even signing up for Apple Plus for a month so you can watch it. But the particular clip I wanted to show you had a little nudity in it, a little foul language, and I thought, well, that's not so good. So let me tell you. Rebecca is a woman who owns a soccer team in England. Her husband has divorced her, left her for another woman, and he loved this soccer team. It meant everything to him. And so in order to get back at him, to make him hurt the way he hurt her, she finds a coach in the U.S. who seems a bit aimless, who's not particularly successful, and brings him to England to be the coach of this team. Her hope is the team will fail miserably. And early on, after Ted gets there, there is some adjusting to be done. He is, however, a person who has made a resolution, a commitment somewhere in his life, that he is going to acknowledge the value in people, see the positive in what was going on around him, and not allow his own generous spirit to be diminished by the behavior and the words of others. He comes across, frankly, early on, he comes across a little naive and compared to what we normally see in the world around us. But amazingly, over time, this team starts to take off. They begin to function like a team, and the members begin to feel better about themselves under Ted's leadership. Rebecca, too, is affected, despite all of her cynicism and sarcasm, that he refuses to be diminished by that. And he treats her with respect and with joy, I would say. Rebecca, toward the end of the first season, so here's a spoiler alert if you haven't seen this, toward the end of the first season, has come to really respect and value Ted and his friendship. And she's aware that she has to tell him the truth about why she brought him over to England. She goes down to his office, and with a tear-streaked face, she tells him that she had used him, that she had brought him over to get back at her husband, that she had sabotaged him at every step along the way, and that she had hoped that he would fail. And she felt so badly about it, and that she asked. She felt terribly for it. Ted is sitting at his desk, and he puts his head down for a minute. And he pauses as if he's taking all of this in. And then he comes around the desk and he says to her, "I forgive you. I forgive you." He said, divorce makes people do crazy things. And because he himself had just was going through a divorce himself that he had not wanted, he said, divorce makes people do crazy things, whether you're the one who was left or you're the one who's leaving. And then they embrace. It is a powerful and moving moment. My friends, my hope is that this year of 2022 will see you resolve to look honestly within your heart and spirit, within your life, and see where there are opportunities for you to ask for and for you to offer forgiveness. Not only will you become stronger in spirit, but the world around you, the small piece of the world that you inhabit, will be transformed. God bless you in the year ahead. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.